Hey, I'm Danny Levy, and you're listening to Digital Transformation and Leadership. This is the show where we go behind the scenes with today's top business leaders to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. This week I'm joined by Tim Parkin, the president of Parkin Consulting. He's a global consultant, advisor, and coach to marketing executives of many world-renowned brands. Today he's also one of the leading marketing advisors out there, working with CMOs and VPs of brands worth over $250 million. And he's also a fellow podcast host of the Marketing Leaders Podcast. Tim, welcome to Digital Transformation and Leadership.
Danny, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited for this conversation.
Me too. I'm glad we synced up across time zones, across countries. So you're dialing in today from Florida.
Absolutely. 12 hours apart. Is that the case?
That's the case, yeah. I'm caffeinated and you're winding down.
Absolutely. Perfect.
So Tim, before we get started, could you introduce yourself and what it is you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm an advisor and consultant to marketing executives and their teams, and I help them to optimize their performance and accelerate their growth.
I've got to ask Tim, how did you get into marketing?
It's a funny story. You know, as a young kid, I was actually into magic, and okay. I wanted to be a professional magician. Yeah. And it's a skill I still carry to this day, but I realized very early on that to be a professional magician would mean performing on nights and weekends, right? That's okay. When people have parties and dinners. Yeah. So that dream got dashed. And then I got into programming, and I did programming and software development for many years. Yeah. But I would work with these large companies and startups and military simulation. I realized they don't have a technology problem. They have a product problem. They're building something that no one really wants to use. Mm. You know, they have a marketing problem, really. And that's what got me interested in marketing. And so from there, I realized marketing is the combination of my two passions. It's technology, you know, marketing is synonymous with technology, and it's understanding how people think and act, which that's what magic is really about. How do you, you know, navigate people and tell a story that's entertaining, that's surprising, and that's delighting and delivers value. Mm-hmm. So combining those two things got me into marketing, and I've loved it ever since.
I love how you combine those two passions. So we're going to talk about that and a lot more today, but before we get into it, I thought we could break the ice a little bit. If you were given an extra hour in the day, a 25th hour, Tim, how would you spend that time?
I hate to say it, but if I had an extra hour a day, I would use it sleeping, genuinely. I'm so passionate about what I do that, you know, my mind is constantly, you know, ablaze with ideas and solving problems and thinking about my clients and the future in marketing. So sleep is, you know, I think up there, one of my top passions as well. I love to sleep. So it would have to be sleep. But if it couldn't be sleep, I would say, you know, I'm an avid reader. My wife is as well. I have so many books, and I have a bad habit of buying books and not reading them because I don't take the time. So time to read would be wonderful.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. I so often read a book and get halfway through and get distracted and do something else and never pick it back up.
It happens far too much.
Yeah. So Tim, we're going to talk today all around marketing and silver bullets don't exist. How to find the best marketing practice for your company, and it's a topic that I'm really keen to talk to you about. I think a lot of people, a lot of companies, often struggle defining and deciding what the best marketing practice should be. And everyone thinks they're a marketing expert. I think that's one of the things with marketing. You know, you might have just written an email once or designed something in Canva, and all of a sudden you're a marketing expert, and you know what you know how to do it and put together the brand strategy and the messaging. So really keen to talk to you about this. So, Tim, why should every organization find their own best practice, and how do they do it?
You know, best practices, and that terminology, that phrase is used so often, especially in marketing, as you said. And I believe that best practices are a sham, that they don't really exist outside of your own organization. And there's so many times my clients have said to me, you know, what's the average, you know, conversion rate? What's the best industry, you know, standard for this metric? Mm-hmm. What are our competitors doing? What about this new platform or tool or technology? Can that do what we want to do? And we are constantly chasing something in the hopes that it will solve our problem or be that silver bullet or be that easy button. But really, it's about survival mentality. The reason we're attracted to these things is that we would just want to survive. We don't want to have to think and solve the problem that's really in front of us, which is often much more difficult to solve. Mm-hmm. And also, if you, you know, quote unquote, do the right thing, if you do the best practice that everyone says is acceptable and okay, you know, you can't be blamed when it doesn't work, because that's what everyone does, right? We did what everyone does. It's the best practice. It didn't work for us. That's not my fault. But there's three major issues here. You know, just because other people do something, whether it's using a platform or a tool or a methodology, whatever it is, it doesn't mean it's working for them. It doesn't mean it's getting them good results. Mm. And it doesn't mean it'll get you good results necessarily. You know, your audience is different. Your market may be different. Your product or services have differences from your competitors. But more importantly, there's a local and global maximum. And so the example I use is, you know, if you climb a mountain and you reach the top of the mountain,
yeah,
that's like using best practices. And you think, I made it. I'm at the top. This is the best we can achieve.
Mm.
Until you turn around and look behind you and realize there's a mountain 10 times taller that you could have climbed, but you didn't, because you focused on the best practices. You didn't think bigger about what's possible for you, for your organization, for your team, for your marketing. So this is the problem, I think, with best practices, is when we look outside to others, when we look to our competitors, when we look to the industry, we're limiting our perspective of what's possible. And instead, we need to look inward and develop our own best practices. And I can talk more about, you know, how I've seen that happen, but that's the big idea here, is stop looking outside for best practices and start looking inside for them.
I think that's a fantastic point. You mentioned around looking outside as well in your own industry, and I guess the thing is, you need to go inside and redefine, you know, what is possible, like you said, Tim. But do you ever see value as well in going outside of your industry? So, you know, stepping outside of the industry you're working in, or if you're in B2B, looking into B2C, for example, does that help, or is it more that you really do have to go internal and redefine things?
That's a great distinction, Danny. I think you're right that you can look outside of your industry for inspiration. Oftentimes, those things are not as literal. They don't translate, you know, one-to-one necessarily. Sometimes they do, but that creative exercise of looking outside your industry is definitely advantageous and helpful. But I think when you look internally, my experience has been, I see so many companies that do stuff that works, and then they start chasing best practices and forget what worked. And they leave it, you know, in the past. And they need to revisit that. Or also, they do something that works and they say, it's working, let's maintain it, rather than how much farther can we push this? What if we tried something new? Once they find some level of success, they're afraid to risk losing that success to gain something even greater.
Yeah.
So it really is about having a mentality of failure is acceptable, testing is necessary, and not ever being satisfied with the status quo. And really, that's what best practices are all about, is status quo. Let's all agree that this is generally acceptable and the best we can all do. But it's really much more than that. We can all do so much more. And the reality that we live in, especially in marketing, is it changes daily. You know, it's changing even faster than that sometimes. So whatever is best practice right now will not be, you know, tomorrow, will not be in 6 months. You know, banner ads used to be a thing, if you can remember those. Yeah. Now you don't see them because you have banner ad blindness.
Yeah.
And so best practice used to be
print brochures. They were a thing not so long ago.
Yeah, right? It feels like yesterday.
Yeah.
But that stuff is obsolete. And so this is the problem with best practices, is they're always shifting.
Hmm.
And this is why you have to constantly be pushing yourself internally to raise things to a new level. You can't be satisfied with the status quo.
Hmm. The best practice, interesting that you mentioned, I often find that you do something a few times, you master it, and there's a best way to do it. And the reason best practice goes in is so that other people in the organization have a guide, that they can do it to that same level, and you can train them, and you can automate things, and you can delegate better, and you can go on to do other things. You know, you don't have to be in the business. You can be focused on the strategy and running it, hopefully, eventually. How do you balance that, Tim? How do you make sure that you can delegate and automate, but at the same time you can also be innovating, and I guess almost being in competition with those best practices to say, hey, is this still the best thing to be doing?
You have to constantly be reevaluating everything you're doing. If you look at the time frame that things are changing right now, you know, with TikTok eroding our attention spans even more, with companies coming out with new products, new innovations, you know, Airbnb with their latest new announcement. Google search is constantly changing. Facebook with the privacy updates. I mean, I could go on and on.
Yeah.
There's so many changes constantly that to say that we have anything that works, it will only work short term. And this is why it's totally reasonable to say we can standardize and formalize and build a process and say this is, for now, the best thing that we have and let's continue that. But you have to build time into your processes, to your marketing, to your business operations to say every 6 months, every quarter, let's just reevaluate one area and say, is this still best? How can we do better? What could we test that's new and different that could push things or raise things to a new level? If you're not doing that, coasting is a downhill journey. And so you can't coast, you can't be satisfied. You have to constantly be pushing to the next level. This is how, you know, if you don't, the competitors will eat your lunch.
Yeah. And you, Tim, you were talking before as well around, you know, getting comfortable with failure, things not always working out. I know some, especially out here in Asia, sometimes that's a very difficult thing to get over, right? That things won't always work out. How do you, I mean, and you're saying you need to do an audit every 6 months or every quarter. Is there a way that you can run these experiments, you know, in a controlled way, or what's the recommendation around that so that you can test things, but it wouldn't impact the wider business, and it's done in an effective way that then if it works, you can bring it in quickly?
There's whole processes and programs around this, and it's one of the things I help my clients with on the marketing side is developing a testing operation, a testing program.
Okay.
But I would say generally, take 10% or 20% of your time, of your resources, and dedicate that to trying new things, to being innovative and experimenting. And if you do that, what you'll find is people will have a bubble of safety net to work within. They'll feel more freedom to explore. And that will lead to wonderful insights, wonderful learnings. The thing about testing is not about improving results.
Mm-hmm.
Testing is about discovering and learning something new, what works, what doesn't work. That's more valuable than results.
Yeah.
The results is a byproduct, which is, you know, great when they're positive. But even when there's not a positive result, you've learned something that doesn't work or does work. And now you can apply that and fold that into everything you do, all of your marketing, all of your business. And so that's the real value of testing and why it's so important. And Google used to have a 20% rule where they would spend 20% of their employees' time on whatever they wanted to. It had to be somewhat related to the business. But this is where we have, you know, Google Maps and Gmail and all these great inventions that came out of this.
Okay.
That had they not done that, you know, we would never see these things today. And now they're used by, you know, millions, if not hundreds of millions of people. So take some time, set aside the time and make a safe space for your team. You know, even if you're not in marketing, you can do this in sales or, you know, in anything. Allow your people some time, some freedom to try new things.
Yeah. Plus all the crazy ideas at Google, I would imagine, that didn't make it.
Right? Yeah. That'd be an interesting thing to look at.
It would, yeah. There's probably a few good ones in there, I would imagine.
I bet, yeah. The other thing I'd say to that, if I may, Danny,
Sure.
I heard this really great example, which is a company would give out an award, and they'd have people come up with ideas and then try these ideas, and they had an award they would give out for the best idea that didn't work.
Okay.
And if you think about that, it's
like
brilliant
that.
Because it encourages people to have big ideas, and even if they don't work, we're going to reward you. We're going to, you know, applaud you. Because you put your neck on the line and said, I think this idea is interesting. Let's try it.
And Tim, you're typically working with CMOs and VPs of kind of 250 million US dollar brands. That's a fairly large organization. Do you advise that these businesses, like you said, you know, they'd have this kind of 20% rule so people have the space and freedom to go off and think and try to innovate? Or Do you think that those types of companies should actually have a team internally where, you know, it's their mandate or their mission to do this audit or to come up with these ideas or to be in competition really with the status quo within the company?
Yeah, it's both. So around that size, which is, you know, probably the average, you can have your people do this. But when you get larger, some of my clients, you know, are 2 billion you need both. So you need your people to be, you know, empowered to come up with these ideas and participate, but you also need a function within the organization, inside the marketing organization, that is a small team that is leading this cause, leading the charge to say, here's how we're going to organize and prioritize these ideas and facilitate them and manage and support, you know, the organization. Because the best ideas, you know, from a marketing perspective, don't come often from inside of marketing. Mm-hmm. They come from the sales team and the customer service team, from customers themselves, et cetera. So really having an internal unit in the marketing organization to facilitate and manage and run this operation, but then allowing everyone in the company, not just in marketing, to participate mm-hmm. and be empowered to contribute ideas, to participate, to listen in to, you know, the results and the progress and the learnings that are happening is absolutely essential to the process.
Culture-wise, you've got to have the right culture in that everyone's open-minded, I guess, to share these ideas, to work across departments, that the management are open, you know, bottom-up to getting ideas and trying things out. Do you find that that's a difficult thing sometimes to put in place, or do you have any recommendations around how you can put in place that right culture? Because I guess without that, you know, the kind of the change and the best practice, that will always be in place because people aren't willing to listen.
Man, that hits hard. You're speaking from a place of the real world now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You know how hard it is. Yeah.
I
used to think when I started out that culture was this buzzword, that it was you know, nonsense, and people just threw it around. And then once you get in the trenches and you start to really experience these things, you realize, my God, culture makes or breaks things.
It does.
And it is a hard thing to instill and install a culture of failure is acceptable, let's test everything, no one's opinion is more important than anybody else's, et cetera. So yes, absolutely the culture is imperative for this to work, and you have to adopt that mindset and that behavior. It's better when organizations already have that, obviously. It's a lot easier. But it's not impossible to move in that direction. It just takes a little bit longer. But, you know, I think there's three facets here, at least in a high-performance marketing team. There's people, there's process, and there's alignment.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really need all three of those, you know, to have a high-performing marketing team. You need the right people, you know, as they say, the right people on the bus. You need a solid process, which drives everything. Marketing is much more of a process than people think. And everyone has to be aligned. I mean, we talk about culture or shared goals or the vision of where we're headed. If they're not aligned, it doesn't matter how good your people are and how good your process is. You know, we can't work together. We don't have the right culture. So all three of those pieces are really key. And you're spot on, you know, that this is really a change management initiative at its core of getting the culture in the right place.
Yeah. And especially when, like you were saying earlier, around the best practice, often those best practices have been in place for years at businesses. And, you know, they're there for a reason. Again, you know, challenging those and changing those, it can take time. Unless there's a major stress on the business, then all of a sudden, I guess like the pandemic, you find that innovation would happen at rapid pace and they can be put to one side very quickly.
Yeah, you know, it's exciting. It's exciting though, because one of my clients, for example, they are about to go IPO. They're on the path to IPO. They're almost $1 billion. You know, they were got private equity investment, wanted to make changes. And so, you know, the SVP came to me and said, we need to improve our campaign process, how we run marketing campaigns. And so I made some recommendations and suggestions. And he actually came back to me and said, you know, I don't think this is going to work. We need to blow this up and do something way more radical.
Okay.
And I said, okay, you know, I can tell you that if you're really ready for it. And so I presented, you know, my framework, which is called test-driven marketing, which is basically all marketing is testing and experimentation, and we align that through the strategy. And it's really, you know, radical, cutting edge, test first, everything. And now they're embracing it. It's really exciting to watch because from the top, the buy-in is there to say, we're a traditional old school marketing organization. We've always done things, as you said, the way that it's been installed for years. But now let's think differently. Let's install a new way of thinking. Let's change our culture and let's have everyone embrace this. So it's been really exciting to watch them go through that process and to see the transformation that's happening. It's not an easy thing, as we were just talking about. Mm. It's going to take time for sure. But I think it's the right step forward, especially in today's environment with what's happening around the world, you know, with the economy, at least here in the States, and with, you know, the environment around COVID and hopefully leaving this pandemic.
Yeah. Always refreshing to hear, let's blow this up. We need something more radical.
Right?
I bet you don't hear that very often.
No, when you do, you get so excited because someone gets it here.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They understand where we need to go. I mean, you can't be playing in small bets. This is, you know, you got to think big. You got to act bold and brave.
Tim, I wanted to ask you as well. We're talking about change. We're talking about blowing things up. We're talking about, you know, doing these audits and challenging the status quo every few months. B2B marketing is still quite traditional in a lot of senses, right? I mean, people are still doing things that they were doing, say, 5 or 10 years ago in terms of B2B marketing, in terms of measurement, how they do things, attribution. Any thoughts around, I know this is a big question, but any thoughts around B2B and why the rate of change has been so slow?
Yeah, you know, the sales cycle in B2B is challenging and complex. Yeah. And I think that muddies the waters a lot. And about half of my clients are B2B, and you see this. And it's funny because they recently had a workshop, you know, with sales and marketing getting together. And they spent, you know, 15 minutes debating, what is a lead? What does a lead mean? What does a lead represent? And I thought, if you're here, this is trouble, you know, troubled waters. So it's a hard thing to understand, to wrap your mind around the process, the buyer's journey, and the sales cycle. And some of my clients have, you know, an 18-month sales cycle, you know, million-dollar deals. So it's really complicated, and there's so many people involved. I think, though, that B2B has a lot to learn from B2C, not necessarily in the simplicity of the transaction, but in how marketing happens, at least. And we're starting to see the waters change here and the tide change in terms of influencer marketing is massive on B2C side. And we're seeing that more and more on the B2B side, where they're adopting this mentality that, you know, that's an acceptable activity and that influencers and social does have an impact in B2B. It's not old school, you know, backdoor meetings anymore, that buyers are more informed, digital is more of a thing. So I think there's progress there. I see hope. But it's definitely complicated. But I think it's complicated because B2B marketers make it more complicated. And we've relied on the traditional tactics, traditional tools, when we need to think differently about, you know, what the digital world we're in and how people actually research and communicate and connect with each other.
Yeah. And in B2B as well, there's still a bit of a default around kind of attribution and being able to measure leads from certain activities, less on maybe longer term thinking or looking more at what kind of word of mouth activities. I find that it's still a lot of the time would tie back into how many leads can we generate with this activity.
Yes, there's definitely a consensus in B2B marketing that, you know, let's measure what we can. And often it's the things we can't measure that we need to be thinking about and investing in. And there's this dependency on, you know, if we can measure it, we'll do it. If we can't, we won't. And that's the wrong line of thinking. Instead, we need to think from the buyer's perspective of how do they want to be treated? What are they going through? And how can we meet them where they're at the right time, regardless of whether or not we can measure it? And I think that a lot of this, B2B, B2C, it doesn't matter. Marketing comes down to the golden rule. Treat the buyer, treat the customer how you would want to be treated if you were the customer in that situation.
Yeah.
And that means, you know, how you communicate, where you communicate, how you advertise, you know, how much you follow up with them, how you run your campaigns. I mean, it's everything. If you were the customer, what marketing would you do to yourself and how would you do it? And I think if we thought that way, and then if we apply just great marketing, do great marketing and don't worry so much about can we track it? What are the results? How many leads do we have? If you do those two things really well, you'll have no problem in the world. You'll have as many deals and opportunities and leads and whatever you want to measure as you want. But more importantly, you'll be making great connections and adding value for customers. And that's really what marketing is about.
Yeah. And when they need the service you provide, you're the first thing that comes to mind because you've been there and you've provided consistent value over a period of months or even years in some cases, but they will come to you. So it's not a short-term play, right?
Absolutely. And that's a hard thing to wrap your mind around. Yeah. It's a hard thing to believe because we need results yesterday and we need to track it and prove it because our job's on the line and our budget is running out. You know, I realize the hard demands that most marketers are under, but, you know, we have to step back and say, what are we doing? And we got so spoiled with digital that we could track things and now we're losing that. And people are freaking out because, you know, there's privacy changes and, you know, data privacy and Facebook changes and Google's changing and we can't track email anymore. And, you know, the whole world is falling apart. And I think it's a good thing. We just need to step back and realize what is marketing really about and how do we go about it the right way? And it's not necessarily that we can measure everything. And that's okay.
And with the measurements and with the tools and the technology, you know, again, you mentioned this earlier that we get focused on that, and we think that okay, we'll bring in this tool, and it's going to solve our problems, or it's going to be the silver bullet, as you spoke on earlier. But is that the most important thing? It's clearly not. But why is it more important that people learn how people think and decide, and why is that so important in your opinion?
I truly believe the formula for performance is people times process equals performance. And so if you think about this on a 2x2 grid, you know, at the bottom left you have, you know, people who are average and an average or no process. You know, if that's the case, you're in a crisis mode because you're just headed downward in a downward spiral. If you have great people though, but you have no good process, you might have some highs and lows. You know, your people do really great, but then they don't have a process to follow through, so things fall through the cracks. And if you have a really solid process and average people, you'll have like decent results consistently, but you'll never really, you know, excel beyond that. It's only if you have, you know, A players, exceptional people, and, you know, rock solid world-class process that you can reach peak performance. This is what I believe, at least. Yeah. And so you'll notice nowhere in there did I talk about tools or technology or any of that stuff. And despite being a technologist myself, you know, my background's in technology. So I think technology and tools can help us, but we have to start from the fundamental understanding that people and process drive performance, and that the tools and technology and platforms and data can help fuel that, but they're not the end-all be-all. And oftentimes we have this shiny object syndrome, you know, we're just chasing the next tool, the next platform, as we talked about. And that never works. You know, I haven't heard one story or experienced it myself where someone adopted a platform and said, you know what, all the promises they said on the box were true, and now we have all the revenue we wanted and all the deals and opportunities, and this worked out great. It never goes that way. And yet, despite that, we never learn. And then we immediately turn to the next tool or technology with a new set of promises.
Yeah. So do you always look at, say, you look at people first, then the process, and then is it last the tools and technology? Is it in that order for you?
Yes. Yeah. I would say people and process simultaneously. Sometimes you can see where there's, you know, a bigger gap. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, from my experience, there's more process missing than people, at least on the marketing side. But many times it's definitely a deficiency in people. Not that there's, you know, bad people, but they don't have the support that they need. They don't have the skills that they need, you know, things like that. So solving those problems are pretty easy to solve. The process problems are a little bit more complicated to solve depending on, you know, the business and the issues they're facing and the type of process.
Which we've been talking about as well, challenging those processes.
Absolutely, yes.
And Tim, I'm going to put you on the spot because it's a technology podcast. So you've got the people... You've got the people sorted, you've got your A players, okay, you've got your processes in place, and we're challenging the preconceptions and we're innovating. The last thing, the technology and tools or the MarTech stack, what would be your kind of ideal marketing technology stack at the moment if it was your company?
If it was my company, that's interesting. Yeah, that's a different answer than what would I generally think. I would say generally, most of my clients have a combination of HubSpot and Salesforce. I do think they're great tools. I think HubSpot's a little bit overhyped. However, it is a great tool. It is a great platform. It's a great company. They do great marketing themselves.
Yeah.
Salesforce, you know, it's the best out there. It's the gold standard, but it's definitely complicated, and you have to have the right buy-in and support. Mm-hmm. In terms of email marketing, you know, I think email marketing is extremely valuable. If you're on the B2C side, Klaviyo is the gold standard. There's nothing better. On the B2B side, you know, again, HubSpot is a good solution. There's some others there out there, but HubSpot is a good stopgap there. But personally, the one probably people haven't heard about is Notion, N-O-T-I-O-N.
Yeah.
Notion is an amazing platform. It's kind of like Trello meets Basecamp meets Asana. You know, it's kind of a generic platform to do project management, task management, document management. But I use it with all my clients. I use it for my own business. I use it for myself personally. There's a free version. You know, go check out Notion.com. It's absolutely amazing. And there's so many things you can do with it. It's so versatile and has so many use cases in any business and especially in marketing.
Interesting. I've heard a lot about Basecamp. Our US team uses Basecamp, but I've not heard about Notion. So I'm going to go over and and check that out, because we've been looking for a project management tool ourselves.
Yeah, I think it's a great solution. There's lots of templates on there. There's lots of YouTube videos, great training. It's super intuitive, but also has a lot of power hidden underneath the surface.
Okay.
And it's growing fast. It's a really great platform. And like I said, I use it literally with all my clients.
Tim, are there any kind of new technologies coming through? I'm going to rattle off some buzzwords now. AI, blockchain, you know, data platforms, you know, metaverse is the new and hot thing. Is there any new tech or anything you're hearing about that is exciting you and you think that that could have, you know, quite big implications for marketing?
You know, I hate to be a downer here. I've talked a lot about the metaverse in many places.
Yeah.
I'm not too hyped on blockchain, NFTs, metaverse, or AI. And actually, I did some work in AI. My background is in the video game industry and military simulation. And I spent some time developing artificial intelligence. And I think that there's some great tools out there now on the marketing side, at least with like copy generation, where you can, you know, write copy for you and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that AI really has a place in most marketers' tool belts.
Yeah.
I think when you have a large organization, you know, some of these billion-dollar brands that have lots of data, there's a lot of use cases for machine learning and for AI there. But if you're, you know, 200 million and below, I don't think a lot of that stuff has value. Mm-hmm. I think blockchain has some really interesting applications potentially, but we really haven't seen that yet. Mm. I think the big thing you hit on there is the metaverse, which, you know, Facebook now Meta is betting big on.
Yeah.
I think from a marketing perspective, there's a ton of hype about it. We'll see if it has real value. We'll see if they can get adoption. My concern is that, you know, the average user is not going to be willing or ready or able to participate, you know, so they won't have large scale adoption. But to me, the metaverse has potential. I think a lot of people are skeptical, but we were skeptical of email, you know, when it was first created. We were skeptical of the web. So I'm optimistic, but I'm still a little bit hesitant about, you know, when it'll happen.
Yeah. I mean, you do still have kind of the early, I guess, metaverse games, don't you, as well, where people were designing their avatars and spending a long time in these virtual worlds. My daughter, my 9-year-old daughter's always in Roblox. I have no idea what she's doing, but she's running around and she's in a cafe. And for Christmas, we got some vouchers so she could dress and style the avatar in the game.
That's amazing.
So, yeah. I mean, there's clearly so cool. Some implications there, I would guess, for marketing and for retail brands, you know, on the clothes. But yeah, for the wider adoption, we don't know.
Yeah, you make a really good point, though, that, you know, the new generation, you know, they're going to be the ones to set the standard of what's okay and acceptable and how things should operate. So we need to be looking to them and following in their footsteps to see what is acceptable, what is normal. And they've grown up in a whole new world. You know, I have a 3-year-old, and to watch her use the iPad and swipe and, you know, tap, and like, this is amazing. You just know this. You learned this so quickly. So I think the new generation is really going to set the standard of what's possible.
They are. They're very digitally savvy. When I get stuck on my iPhone, I call my 9-year-old daughter, and she comes in and either does a voice command or does two clicks, and it's sorted.
So. they're geniuses,
aren't
they?
She's my tech whiz. Yeah, yeah. Well, they're born into it. That's the difference. So, you know,
yes.
The way she's organized the home screen on the iPad, I felt so ashamed when I looked at my phone. I had to reorganize it all.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, Tim, I hope you've got your crystal ball. I was gonna ask. I mean, you know, we're recording this in May 2022. We're coming out of the pandemic. We've got other kind of macroeconomic things to consider. We've got the war in Ukraine, rapidly rising inflation, and other things to look at. You know, maybe a recession coming in. What do you think the next month, 6 months, has in store for us, and how would you see marketing kind of contributing to businesses and making sure that they can get through this kind of difficult period?
You know, Danny, I tell people I'm three things. I'm a skeptic, a cynic, and a pessimist.
Yeah.
And when you're all three of those things, you know, the outlook is bleak. But I'll tell you, I'm pretty optimistic about the future. I think there's a lot of bad things happening. There's a lot of bad conditions, but I think the future looks really bright. And I'm excited to share this light with your listeners, because, you know, despite everything that's happening, we have to reflect and remind ourselves, we just survived, you know, 2 years of this pandemic, which, you know, there was some prediction of, but you know, the devastation, the impact it had on us socially and mentally was immense. And we survived that, you know, so there's hope here. And despite the economic conditions, despite, you know, the geopolitical things that are happening, I think the future is really bright. And I think marketing has a big role to play in that. I think we're going to see more in-person activity, obviously, as things continue to open up. But I think hybrid is here to stay. I think people have realized and woken up to the fact that we don't have to go to an office every day to work. And I think that's going to continue to disrupt companies, and that there's going to be a battle over talent, which we're seeing play out right now with how do we acquire people? Where do they live? How do they work? Some companies are very adamant on come to the office. This is how we operate. Others are more open and flexible. I think we're going to see more acceptance of taking time off, more sustainable lifestyles, especially when it comes to work. And I think marketing is just going to continue to explode. You know, we have TikTok. We have all these streaming platforms. Streaming video is just taking off. You know, TikTok has taken off. We're going to see more video, more consumption, shorter form content and video because our attention spans are being eroded. So marketing has a huge role to play. And we're also going to see, I think, the closeness of people who were out of reach, like celebrities, becoming more accessible to the average person. I'm not a believer in the crypto NFT, as I said. We'll see. As of this recording, the market and crypto is crashing. You know, we'll see if that recovers and rebounds, but I don't think so. But I think marketing has a huge role to play in all these things, and I think marketing will continue to grow, continue to increase, because there's just so much noise in the marketplace. And that's a good thing for marketers, and it's a challenge for marketers, but there's constantly new innovation and technology and transformation happening, and it's a really exciting time we're living in. So let's not lose sight of that.
It is a very exciting time, right? If you can keep up with that rate of change, there's so many things you can do now. And like you said, the pandemic was so challenging for us, but one of the good things that came out of it was this new hybrid approach and being able to work from anywhere and spend more time with your family and being able to look after yourself and not commuting kind of 10 hours a week, which is what I used to do.
It's amazing, right? Yeah. How have we been operating for that way for so long? And like you said, family first and spending time and being with each other and reflecting and realizing what's important. You know, all of these are great outcomes of the pandemic.
So Tim, I've really, really enjoyed the conversation today. Thank you for talking me and the listeners through all of those points. Just before we finish, I wanted to ask if you had a time machine sitting in your garden, and you could go back to January 2020, what would you do differently?
There's so many things I'd do differently, right? I think this is a brilliant question and a thought experiment. And I think everyone listening should ask themselves the same question, because I think before I answer it, I'll say how you answer this question, I think, says a lot about how you should spend the next year or two. Yep. So think about this question, please. For me, you know, we were supposed to go on our annual vacation overseas, and the pandemic disrupted that. So I would say I would go back and take that vacation immediately. You know, we were headed to Lake Como in Italy, and vacation is so important in the pandemic, and having to shelter in place, you know, was very challenging. So getting out would be tremendous. At that time, I was actually in New York, despite living in Orlando, I was on business. And just being in the city, you know, in Times Square was such a fascinating time. So to go back to that moment and just kind of take it all in one more time, realizing the whole world is about to change, would be so fascinating. But I also think I would use that time to go back and just tell myself how valuable this time will be to spend, you know, with family, with each other, with close friends, because I think we need that reminder, at least I do. That, you know, often we spend so much of our lives working and thinking about our businesses and things like that. And that's important. And I think it's rewarding. But as I said, what's really important is family and the time we have with each other. And we've seen that with Ukraine. If you listen to the stories of Ukrainian people, just their resolve and their closeness, it's been inspiring. And I think it's a great reminder. So I would go back and use that time to get away on vacation and, you know, set the stage and prepare to enjoy the time together and not belabor it and not be, you know, upset about it, despite the challenges that were coming.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks for sharing that, Tim. So, Tim, how can people get in touch with you if they'd like to find out more and learn more about you?
I'd love to connect. I'm a connector. So if I can make introductions or, you know, provide you with information or just a potential for business, I would love to connect with you. You can find me on my website, timparkin.com, T-I-M-P as in Paul, A-R-K-I-N.com, or on LinkedIn. Let's definitely connect on LinkedIn. I post often there. I go live on LinkedIn Live every other week or so. So I would love to see you there and connect and share thoughts and ideas and help each other with this crazy world we're in. And how to navigate it successfully with all the digital transformation that's happening.
Yeah, fantastic. And you should check out Tim's podcast. You have a podcast as well, Marketing Leaders Podcast.
I do. Thank you. Yes. And there's some more changes coming there as well. So talking about innovating and trying new things. Yeah. More great stuff in the works.
Fantastic. Tim, thank you for coming on Digital Transformation and Leadership and sharing all of your wisdom and insights with the listeners. I've really, really enjoyed the conversation.
Me too, Danny. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Made it to the end of another episode of Digital Transformation and Leadership. If you're enjoying the show, please do leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. No need to leave a written review, just clicking on the 5 stars is enough. I'd really appreciate it as it helps the show get found and it helps those listener numbers grow. And we'll be back again next week when we will again go behind the scenes with another top business leader to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. The Digital Transformation and Leadership Podcast is a Blue Aurora Media production.